They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, we're coming to you from the wonderfully, actually quite wet, Mosaic District in the heart of Fairfax today. And joining us on the Commons right here is my old friend, Bill Davis. Bill, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sue, and hello.
Hello. Hey, Bill.
Yes.
What's in a name? That which we call a rose by any other name would smell as sweet, right? Or did the bard get that so wrong?
I think we need to examine that, Sue.
Okay. Let's do that. Let's talk about that today.
I'm on.
You're on. I know you are on. You're always on. All right. Now, you've been telling me for a long time that we need to take control of the terminology.
Yes.
And that was really highlighted when I watched the Charlie Rose interview with President Assad. And Charlie Rose kept calling them the rebels, and Assad kept calling them the terrorists. And he said, why is it when they attack your country, they're terrorists, and when they attack mine, they're rebels, and they're right. Just not happy with the regime? And I thought, you know what? That's what Bill's been talking about all this time. Bill, I finally get it.
I think there's actually some fine comparison between terrorists and, you know, the vendors that work these HOAs. But that's a whole other story. Okay.
All right. We won't go there today.
Okay.
Okay. We've got a whole series of words that you and I have talked about sort of off the air.
Yes.
And a long time ago, long before I met you, I had this thing about calling them communities because I never felt that they really were communities.
I share your apprehension.
Okay. So what do we call them? I mean, we need to call them something and not be classified as nutcases.
Okay.
You know, we can call them gulags, we can call them war zones, which, I mean, everything fits. But when you're trying to have a regular conversation, community, I like to call them developments, subdivisions.
Well, we need to also, there's different types of these involuntary membership places. You know, they're kind of like financial plantations where the people there are being harvested for somebody else's gain, but when you're talking about these places, you're talking about regular HOAs as opposed to condos, right? Are we going to distinguish between the two during the?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but yeah, projects or developments. That's understating the issue, but yes, projects is a good word.
Well, it's somebody's project, right?
Right. It's always somebody's master plan, and it's funny because in any movie you watch, the master plan is usually bad for everybody else except for the person who said it, and I don't understand how these things are being sold as master plan communities. Don't you get it? You're not the beneficiary of the master plan.
We're going to differentiate between condos and HOAs.
When we need to, there's going to be some distinctions, but The involuntary membership aspect is the same for both of them.
Let's set it up.
Okay.
I think the big difference is that in a condominium, you really don't buy real estate. All you own, all you buy is air.
Well, I think my issue with the condominium is that it's really a statutory form of ownership, and it seems to me the industry's been trying to push that. All the negatives that come with that, there really aren't a lot of benefits. Actually, I can't think of any benefits. But they're trying to push all the negatives that go with condos onto regular subdivision and HOA type properties. But I think one of the distinguishing factors is in a condominium, whatever you own, your unit, you also own some pro rata undividable interest in the quote common areas. The common areas are actually commonly owned in common by all the other members of the condo corporation, but in an HOA, typically the HOA owns, you know, there's HOA owned property that people mislabel as common areas. But to me, that's one of the big distinctions. Aside from the statutory form of ownership, you don't have HOA property. I mean, just standard real property law applies to buying a home in those subdivisions for the most part. It's not a statutory form of ownership. So you're already starting off, less than a citizen when you buy a condo unit in many ways.
Well, I mean, the controls in a condominium are incredible.
When I saw that
in a condominium, they actually have dress codes and what you can wear when you go out.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And, you know, out of your unit, it's insane. And we won't go into co-ops. That's a whole different ball game as well.
Okay.
I was known as the co-op queen at one point, but they have rules that just absolutely boggle the mind. You have a proprietary lease in a co-op. So you don't even own airspace. You own a share of the corporation. And they can walk in on you any time they want.
Yeah.
And that's a whole different ballgame. But all right, let's stick to HOAs and let's stick to condominiums. And you've convinced me that there is a difference between mandatory membership and involuntary membership.
Well, I think there's a perception difference, and that's one reason why these have been sold as, I mean, first of all, the word membership sounds like it's actually beneficial, you know. American Express, they have commercials about member, all these privileges. There are privileges that come with this. I mean, the word member is a misnomer in itself. But the word mandatory is surely a euphemism for involuntary. I mean, why don't you call them involuntary membership corporations? I mean, somehow, that's not quite as offensive as mandatory membership. I won't forget being involved in a discussion with somebody who kept saying, you had a choice. So, okay, great. Well, why is it you find mandatory membership to be okay, but somehow you have a problem with the word involuntary membership? I mean, you know, why do you find a distinction between these two?
Okay, so we're going to call them involuntary membership corporations.
Well, I think most of them are corporations, yes. Actually, you just hit one word, mandatory versus involuntary. They're involuntary. Don't let anybody fool you. They're involuntary. There's nothing voluntary about them.
So can we replace the word membership?
Well, I think there needs to be a different word because I don't think that connotes privileges, and there really aren't any privileges. What you have is your house is, or your property is liability or is pledged as security for another entity's debts. So is that a privilege of being a member? I mean, and somebody else sets the rules and somebody else decides whether you can use the HOA property. Is that a privilege? That doesn't strike me as a privilege.
Well, yeah. They're taking rights and turning them into privileges, and that's a whole different show. And I'm serious. I mean, you buy into something like this. For instance, in my association, they just amended the governing documents. whereas we had a right to park. It's now a privilege that the board can take away from you if they decide they don't like you very much.
Not much of a right. Well, how about, you know, you'll hear people talking about, oh, you, if you don't like it, get active, get involved, vote. Well, there's no right to vote in these places, virtually anywhere in the U.S. And when you get into arguments, I was involved in a rather heated argument with a realtor who was hawking property in the subdivision that he was also a board member for one of the HOAs on. It's one of these nasty, you know, master HOA with sub-HOAs and one of those whole nightmares. And he kept selling this as, oh, you got a right to vote. Well, you go look at their bylaws and their restrictive covenants, and they make it really clear that voting is a privilege that can be suspended at any time by the board. And that doesn't sound much like a right to me. And since it's secret, you don't even have assurances that your vote counted or that you got to vote. That's kind of a problem.
You think?
Yeah.
So what do we use for the word problem? But Bill, the one thing that I find very disconcerting is the fact that everything is so misrepresented.
Yes.
So consumers come in and what they're buying is not what they're told they're buying.
Right.
And they don't, you know, nobody wants you to know what you're getting into. Nobody wants you to know what the issues are, what the problems are. I mean, I've had people say they have asked for financial situations. I know my daughter, I said, you know, make sure you get the financials in the disclosure package. And so she asked the realtor. The realtor says, well, there's nothing there. Don't worry about it. I said, you get it. So she gets it, and it was old. I mean, it was 6 months old. It had, you know, they'd got it for another sale that had fallen through, and they said, oh, well, you know, here it is. I said, well, have they had changes since then? But, you know, nothing was given to them that was up to date.
Right.
They didn't want to know. I mean, they didn't want you to know. And it was like, somebody's actually asking for this stuff? What's wrong with them?
Yeah, isn't it funny that you hear from the people hawking these places and the industry vendors that you knew it when you went in, and yet they're the very people who've done everything they can do to prevent you from having access to the information?
Yes.
In Texas, I mean, especially the members, you think you're any better off when you're a member? In Texas, you know, the industry folks fought, this is the management companies and the HOA attorneys, fought very hard to prevent members from having access to the information. I mean, the bylaws are going to say, oh, yeah, you can come in and inspect them at any time, but when you actually try to do that, good luck with forcing them to provide the records, or they'll adopt a policy that makes it absurdly expensive to try to gain access to anything. Well, a few years ago, the industry people put up in our state it's called Property Code 207, which was to provide information about an HOA. But when you read it, you look at who's the beneficiary here. It wasn't the homeowner. The primary beneficiary is the management companies, because this was all about, sure, you can get the information as long as you pay a fee, and it's okay for the fee to be paid to the managing agent. Well, who do you think promoted that kind of legislation? And here's the next deal. The buyer can't get it directly. They have to request it from the homeowner, who can't provide it because the homeowner can only get it from the HOA. Okay? And, I mean, really, that's who has that information. So, the buyer wants the information, and they, you know, expect the seller to provide it, but the seller can only get it from the HOA and its managing agent. Well, Texas, the law provides that the buyer can back out if they don't get the information, which sounds fair from a buyer perspective, but here's a homeowner trying to sell that horrible HOA property, and they can't. You know, the management company can play games with them, charge them extra fees, expedite fees, and they know that they can jeopardize the sale of the property.
Yeah, they do that all the time.
Oh, sure, they do it all the time, and it's really become kind of an extortion thing. So they're only interested in providing the information if they can make a buck off of it, and they're only going to make and it's not their information to provide. I think that we'd go a long ways forcing mandatory disclosure. If these things are investments, as the industry would have us believe, well, it's kind of like the lot you purchase is like buying shares of stock. And these are very expensive shares of stock offered to the public, and they should have to provide just like a prospectus. That information needs to be public, and the industry folks need to be held accountable when it's false, and it's frequently false. I mean, you can't hide embezzlement unless you falsify the documents, right? And we know there's a lot of embezzlement going on in these places.
Oh, I get daily emails about embezzlement. And the thing is that now the industry will say, well, that's why you need to have the industry professionals. But guess what?
Right.
They're the ones who are doing all the stealing.
Absolutely.
You know, they're the ones who are doing all the stealing. And it's not just the employees. You think, all right, well, they picked up Joe off the street and put him in there, and they really didn't have a whole lot to go on. But it's the men, it's the owners of the companies that are stealing.
Right.
And they manage numbers of associations, and so they're stealing a little bit from everybody. And,
right.
You know, a little bit here and a little bit there, pretty soon it comes up to some real money, doesn't it?
Yes.
And you're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars in some cases.
Yes. I could dig up more than a few articles where the amounts taken were between $900,000 and $2 million.
Yeah.
Just one condo association in Austin, I believe it was last summer, the manager got busted for taking $1 million. And of course, the homeowners are being threatened with unit owners, I guess they're called, are being threatened with foreclosure unless they keep paying into this organization that has no accountability to them. The manager can sit back and just smugly threaten them with foreclosure unless they cough up more money with no accountability. It's a pretty horrible. I won't be teaching my kids. I'll be teaching them to avoid ever buying a condo. That's for certain. In fact, anybody I know.
So what's the answer, Bill? I mean, there's nothing positive about them.
Right.
What's the answer? How do we get people to understand?
Well, there are some bigger problems than just this, and one of them is there has to be viable options for people. And I realize this varies across the country. In fact, a minute ago, you were mentioning co-ops. They have some business co-ops here, but an actual co-op is a very rare thing in Texas. And so you really won't, that's not something we encounter. But HOAs, on the other hand, good luck finding a place that
doesn't have one,
and I assure you they weren't built for the benefit of the homeowners. I keep coming back to the master plan that you were never the designated beneficiary for. But I think education of the homeowners and getting it out there, and you're not going to get that education from NAR, National Association of Realtors, and certainly not the industry people. All they care about are the title people. They just want to keep buying and selling. And in fact, if you're unhappy, that's great, because what's the first recommendation they always have?
Move.
Move if you don't like it.
Move.
That's another two sales. You got to sell your house and buy another one.
Yeah.
So,
well, and then you're going to sell that to someone else, so some poor sucker's going to come in and end up with the problems you're running away from, but you're jumping into somewhere else.
The next greater fool. Yep, that's the problem with both of those. You got to find the next greater fool.
Doesn't it sound a little bit like the Mad Hatter's Tea Party? You just keep going around and around. seriously, Bill.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like the reverse of musical chairs. You don't want that chair. It's the reverse. You do not want to be the one stuck with the chair. You're trying to get away from the chair. It's like, I don't know, hot potato or something like that. You don't want to be the one stuck with it. Yeah, it's terrible. Well, I think there's several phrases though that we should look at, and association is one of them.
Okay.
The term association. Why is it that this word is being used? In my mind, it's because it's ideal for the industry because it connotates something very different from reality. When you hear the word association, people think of a loose-knit group of people. And this is used to fool buyers, fool owners, judges, and juries. These are not, in virtually every case, it's an incorporated entity. It's a corporation. It's not your fellow, it's not your neighbors. You may have some neighbors who are in control of it, but it isn't your neighbors. And that distinction is very important. And, but you won't find the industry very often referring to these as corporations, because who wants to live in a place where you got to be a involuntary member of a community corporation or a subdivision corporation? I mean, it just doesn't sound too appealing. But I think that word's another word that's misused frequently.
So we're going to replace association with corporation, right?
Well, I think so, and because, okay. And I think you'll find that frequently the statutes are, if you force a change of that word in the statutes, you'll find that people were misled, or maybe it was just deliberately done to be confusing in the statutes as to whether you were referring to the entity or whether you were referring to the residents. Because they'll say the association many times is like, wait a minute, are you referring to the people there? Or are you referring to the HOA corporation? And there's a huge difference. And when you start using the correct terminology, it makes you understand how you have to clarify the rest of the statute. Oh, I actually mean the members of the corporation or the shareholders or members of the corporation as opposed to the corporation itself. And that's very important when you're talking about rights and defenses and things like that. Are you trying to give the corporation more power over the involuntary members, or are you trying to give the involuntary members some rights against the corporation? And so when you hear them talking about making stronger associations, the industry's talking about making the HOA ever more powerful over the homeowner, but they use those words because people think it means making a better or an improved group of people somehow with better rights, and that's not what's going on.
But you're losing your rights. I mean, every time I live in a very old association, a very old corporation. It'll take me a while, but I'll get there. I promise. And our governing documents, our covenants, are only a few pages long, and pretty much the only things that we couldn't do was have a TV antenna, which I don't know if anybody has a TV antenna anymore. It's sort of gone with the arc. And you couldn't hang your clothes up before 10 a.m. or 9 a.m. or whatever time it was. Nobody wanted to see your knickers on the line. So you could hang your clothes up when everybody was at work. So there was a time period, no clothes on the clothesline before 8 a.m. and after 5 p.m. or whatever the times were. And all of that's kind of gone by the wayside. Of course, now the governing documents of the newer corporations are the size of a phone book.
Yes.
And, I mean, they're huge. You can't do this. Your pet can't weigh more than 4 pounds, 9.5 ounces, or else, you can have no more than 3 rose bushes. You cannot have, they have to be all the same color. And, your grass can't be more than 2.5 inches long. It's just this minutia. It's so controlling. It's social engineering.
Yeah. And for whose benefit? It isn't really for the people that live there.
No.
You keep hearing about the counties doing it, but if every place is an HOA, that only works when there are some places that aren't and some places that are. Then the people in the HOAs are going to be bearing more than the cost. But as a practical matter, the county is going to just decide what the tax rate is for ad valorem taxes based upon the total, property value of the area. It shouldn't care one way or the other. That value thing is a whole other one, too. The preserved property values. How many times have you heard that, Shu? How many times have you heard that? And it's always the managers and the realtors I'm using that term generically, but, the real estate agents, real estate brokers that love to use that term. And, the unanswered question, that's an equivocal statement. And it's equivocal because it's misleading and you inherently assume that they're saying it preserves value for you. But you never hear them saying that. They don't say that. They say preserves property values. Well, for who? I think that question needs to be asked. And it's amazing that it's always missing. The industry people came in with pins. They were very worried about reform of HOAs, which was going to, you know, hurt their extortion racket. And it is an extortion racket that was going on here and still is going on here. But, the managers and the HOA attorneys were shaking down homeowners, and they were diverting large amounts of money from the HOA. Some of it would never actually get credited to the HOA because they received the money, but their contracts provided they can negotiate the checks. And, people don't realize that, but a check comes in and say it's made out to, your HOA.
Happy Homes from Hell.
Happy Homes from Hell, Inc.
When
you give the manager the authority to negotiate that check, they can sign it, Happy Homes from Hell, Inc. They don't have to deposit it in the Happy Homes from Hell bank account. And people don't
realize
that.
And they don't.
And people don't realize that. And these managers know it. They know it quite well. That's one of the ways money disappears. When you do that, it's a negotiable instrument. Now it's basically cash, and they can, take it wherever. They don't. That money does not have to be credited to the HOA. And in fact, I've got copies of these bank account agreements that I'm sure the board members have no clue. In fact, the board members didn't sign off on them. It was only the management company, and it provides that they don't have to even deposit in an account or credit it to the account, and that they can pay the management company or other vendors. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. That's, essentially you're trying to get permission to, it's not embezzlement because you got a permission to steal the money. I mean, that's how crazy some of these contracts are. And don't expect any help from the HOA attorney, who is, of course, aligned with the management company as opposed to their client.
Yeah. I mean, they sort of drag each other along, because if a manager gets a new subdivision, then they bring the attorney along. Oh, well, I've worked with this attorney, and he's really good. And,
you have legal problems? Well, we work a lot with, this firm's
legal. Yeah, and so you get rid of your attorney and the one you've got, and you bring in the other guy, and,
right.
It goes on and on.
You mentioned another one a little earlier, the word community. What is it that we're referring to when they refer to the community? That's because I've seen the industry folks frequently refer to they would like for you to call the HOA the community, and it isn't.
No.
At best, it's one member of it, and I'm with you. I don't like using the word community, because to me, every time that word gets used, it's about taking something away from you, because, it's for the community. It's the community. Well, who identify the community, please.
You didn't buy for the community. You bought a house for yourself.
Exactly.
This is insane. It's like you are selfish and self-centered, and absolutely the most horrible person in the world if you even consider doing anything to your house, and with total disregard to how it affects the community.
Yeah,
wait a minute.
I'd like to see how that's even measured. I mean, that just becomes an abstract concept, but all of a sudden they redefine the community to be the HOA corporation. It's like, well, that is not the, quote, community. It is, at best, a member of it, and we shouldn't let them refer to that as the community or call the HOA the equivalent of the community. But see, that again, you can see by using the word association, you start getting confused about whether you're talking about the people there or you're talking about the HOA corporation itself. And so that's another example of how confusion gets introduced, and you get equivocal statements because of a lack of clarity of the terminology being used. But
Some years ago, Bill, I decided I didn't really like the word
community.
Community, but what I ended up calling it was a common ownership development.
A cod.
A cod for short, because there's something very fishy about it. And this, and I talked about it on the air, and all of a sudden, I'm seeing cod written down all over the place. And then I get some calls and some really irate emails from people saying, stop calling them cods because there's no ownership in there, which is kind of the point that you were making. But I still kind of like cod.
Yeah.
So we'll have to find something else for ownership, yeah.
Well, a cod may be more appropriate for a condo, but an HOA, you know, that it irritates me when they come in and call these common areas and then refer to them as yours. They're not yours. They're owned by the HOA. It dictates anything you can do on that property. It can sell the property without your permission. It can take loans out using your house as security for its debts, which that's a whole other reason why I question why these financial institutions are authorizing or are allowing money, loaning money to be used to purchase HOA property. And in fact, I think the only reason that an intelligent one would be doing it these days is because they're not planning to hang on to the loan. They're planning to sell it off to be securitized to investors who don't know any better. But why on earth would you agree to loan money for the purchase of a piece of property where you have unlimited liability for the HOA's debts with that property being the security for it? Why would you, you know, that's not a smart thing to do.
See, people don't understand that, Bill.
Right.
They don't understand that.
But the banks are doing this.
Banks don't care. The government will come in and bail them out anyway.
That's true.
And the banks, you know, the banks will make these loans, but they always sell them on the secondary market.
Right, exactly.
So they get their money up front, and they're out of there.
Right. You know, when you look at Community Associations Institute's public policy, that's one of their big fears, is that the government might not, you know, the government-sponsored entities might not want to fund, invest in loans that are used to purchase property in these subdivisions and condominiums and things like that. And I think that there should be some real question as to why those funds are being used to purchase properties in those areas.
Well, I'll tell you why. I talked to Byron Hankey, and that's exactly why we have CAI now, because they were afraid that, I mean, they weren't selling. Okay, nobody was buying this.
Because people had choice. People had choice back then.
People had choice, but the other thing was the government wasn't subsidizing them, or there were no guarantees or guaranteed loans or mortgages or any kind of government mortgages, government-backed mortgages.
Yes.
So you had to get commercial mortgages, which typically were more expensive and required a bigger down payment. So the idea of having the five member groups in CAI when they first established it was to show the government that everybody was working together, and this was really a good deal. And it was, you know, the government was one of the five people. Homeowners, but they were represented by the board members. The homeowners themselves were not members. The board members were managers, the developers, and then the associates. And the associates were the pool people, the lawn people, and the attorneys were thrown into that group because there really wasn't a whole plethora of CAI attorneys or HOA attorneys out there. They were in that other group. Well, they managed to convince the government that, yeah, everybody can work together under one umbrella, so they got government-backed mortgages, which allowed them to expand the market and reach the first-time buyers. Hey, come in, you know, we'll put you in this townhouse and we'll give you a government-backed loan and you don't have to have a down payment, or your down payment's minimal, and we'll get it for you for a lower interest rate. And, of course, it's affordable, and it's going to protect your property value, so people were signing up. That's how we got to where we are now. But you mentioned a while ago, you talked about property values.
Yes.
I don't know if I told you, but a friend of mine, it looked at one point, because a lot of these governing documents are boilerplate.
Yes.
And at one time, a friend of mine looked at the governing documents, Reston Association of the condominium, and it said right there, very clearly, right at the very top, the purpose for this association is to protect property values. So he said, you know what? I own some investments, and every month, 2 months, 5 months, 6 months, whatever the deal is, I get a report from my investment company to let me know how my investment's doing. So if this is an investment and the association's there to protect my property values, then they should be able to provide me with a report on what they have done and how they have protected my values.
Right.
My values compared to a similar unit that is not in this association, it's not in this development, it's not in this, or it's not in a development at all. It's a freestanding thing. But how am I doing? What have you done to enhance and protect my property values? Well, my understanding is that the board got this letter with this demand, and they just went, bah.
Not quite sure how to respond to that. What?
They had no idea, so of course they had to go to the attorneys, and the attorneys didn't know how to do that. Of course, then they stopped using the purpose of this association is to protect property values.
Right.
That's gone. So if you happen to run across an older development with that in there, and now you know why it's no longer in there.
Okay. Well, one of the things I see a lot is to enhance, say an enhanced property value, but then they refer to the value of the property with a capital P. And this is before the developer has sold off any lots or anything like that. The capital P refers to all the lots in there. Well, the property isn't being sold or taxed at the capital P level. It's not. And so that's just there's a complete disconnect between, and of course the HOA doesn't own all those other properties. And, you know, it's kind of silly to suggest that the things in that document are going to either, enhance or preserve property values of the capital P property. I mean, it's nonsensical and it's irrational because the property is not being sold. It may have been owned by the developer at the time that he imposed the declaration, because he owned all the properties and did that, or he or she or it, really. But once you start selling off the lots, you're no longer looking at, preserving the value of the capital P property. It's not going to be taxed at that level. And frankly, we all know that they don't and never have preserved value for anybody except for the developer and the vendors and the local government, not the members. I mean, all you had to do, it irks me when people want to say, oh, it was the economy, and just, really, so what was it the whole time when the economy was going good? Now you're going to say it's the HOA? No, I don't think so. You can't be inconsistent like that. So it seems to me that the places that fared the worst were HOA properties, at least in the area of the country that I live in, and Arizona and Florida and, many of these other Sun Belt states.
Hey, Bill, I was reading, I've been reading so much stuff, and I don't know what it was or where it was, but some independent group, university, had done a study on property values within HOAs, and they said, yes, initially the property values were higher. So you've got a brand new subdivision, Happy Homes from Hell, and you've got this four walls and a door, right?
Right.
And so you buy the same similar four doors and a wall, or four walls and a door, that's not in that brand new subdivision. That's going to cost you less, but if you buy it in the brand new subdivision, it is going to be more expensive. But over time, it's not going to retain its value. It's not going to maintain that higher differential.
Right. but I don't think it will either.
No, it's not. According to the study, the only time that there's more value to it is right at the very beginning, when there's nothing to compare it to, and the developer is selling it off, and quite often the developer has their own mortgage companies or their own deals with mortgage
right.
companies and banks, so they don't have to go through the arduous job of getting them appraised and having them...
I think that, you know, especially these large, giant master plan community, what you're really looking at is in many ways mortgage fraud on a subdivision level scale. Because what you have is you'll have the original developer, or probably not the developer, but you'll have the builders. Because here there is a distinction, and you know some of these places are pretty big, so they involve a bunch of different entities. But you know they'll go build these houses, and like you said, they don't have to justify anything. The houses will be overpriced, but hey, we'll get you a great deal, and you know why? It's because they can now leverage that as a comparable to all the other homes that they're going to unload in that place. And they're not holding on to those loans. All of them are going to be sold somewhere else. Here's another problem I have with it. You inherently have to pay for the curbs and the roadways and the sidewalks and the water utility infrastructure and everything else that's going in there with a higher price for the home. But you don't own any of it.
No, you don't.
You don't own any of it. But the home costs more, but it's not really worth more. And a lot of that stuff, whatever's not taken over by the city, local government, or the utilities, you're also on the hook for maintaining into perpetuity. And by the way, that so-called common area, you're not a beneficiary of it. You don't own it. Why is your house, and I don't think the taxes that you pay are based upon, you know, you being close to a privately owned park or anything like that. That doesn't change the value of your house. So why should people pay more for that? I don't, you know, that's nonsensical to suggest, oh, it's worth more because there's a privately owned park. The only ownership you have relating to that park is a common liability to help pay for it. You don't own it. You don't have a right to use it. It's just, The economics of these places is misrepresented to the general public on a regular basis. I'm representing a homeowner in a case right now where the HOA owned several tens of acres near a prime location in Central Texas, and they gifted the property to the city for the parks program for the city. Now, you know, that sounds, isn't that good for the community? Doesn't that sound like such a wonderful community benefit?
Yeah.
You know, what a bunch of hogwash. Well, how did the homeowners benefit from that? And if they paid more, you know, the reason the HOA could do that is because the HOA owned the property. Of course, this HOA has a problem because there's express prohibitions against doing that, and that's why I'm representing the homeowner. But most HOAs, there is no such express prohibition. The HOA corporation can do whatever it wants. And again, this is why it's important to distinguish between the homeowners and the HOA corporation. The HOA corporation owns the property, and it can usually do whatever it wants with its own property. It doesn't need the permission of the homeowners. And, usually. In this case, it's different because the declarations prohibited what they were doing. But, you know, that property was worth millions and millions of dollars. So how did the homeowners benefit? You know, if they were supposedly paying a higher price because of this private neighborhood park, well, didn't this HOA just sink their property values by giving all that away? How did the HOA help them in that case? And I know some people are going to say, oh, well, the homeowners no longer have, the HOA no longer has maintenance responsibility for that. Well, then shouldn't the assessments have gone down? No. What you now have is more headroom in the assessments to pay the HOA attorney and the HOA management company. And guess who signed off on all these transfers? The HOA management company.
Of
not
course.
The board. So, you know, I think...
So where's this case right now? It's being litigated, or
yes.
You just started it?
Yes. They essentially came in to represent a homeowner who is being threatened with foreclosure. There's a lot of interesting issues in this case. you have a management company, and this happens all over the United States, a management company claiming an entitlement to X dollars per month for every month that assessments are late or unpaid. And, you know, in Texas, and this has also been going on all over the United States, and it's heavily promoted by the Community Associations Institute. And the reason I can say that without fear of, you know, defamation or anything, is all you have to do is look at their own public policies as to why they're opposed to the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. Fair Debt Collection Practices Act prohibits the redirection or diversion of funds to something other when you have a multiple debt. There's a prohibition against diverting funds to something other than where the debtor says the funds have to go to. Well, these management companies would set up these contracts that purported to allow, to entitle them to X dollars a month for every month the homeowner was late. And then what they would do in this state and many other states is, we call it the priority of payment scam, where they would say, oh, we received money from you, but we're going to apply it to the late fees you owe us, which means you're in arrears on your assessments, which means, oh, you owe us another late fee.
Yes.
And
we
can
foreclose to collect that.
Well, yeah, and then they threaten to foreclose in order to extort money for the benefit of the management company. The HOA is not getting that money. It's the management company and the HOA attorney, because they would do the same thing with the HOA attorney's fees. And, you know, it was, it's quite a racket. And we had the biggest management companies virtually, I mean, this was just uniform. This was ubiquitous with the industry and with, you know, what was going on with these so-called professionally managed HOAs.
Isn't that a bit of a giggle?
Yeah, oh, yeah, they're professional, all right.
I always get a giggle. I always start giggling when I see that, oh, these are the professionals, all right.
You know. There's a lot of professionals serving time, you know. I mean,
Well, the thing is, I mean, they don't know what they're doing half the time.
Oh, they know. They know how to take money that's not theirs, and how to threaten homeowners to try to extort money. I mean, they know how to do that. But you look at the systems they set up that are fairly elaborate in order to do this. But we fairly recently had a law that's to try and put an end to this. I'm not sure what you want to call it, aside from extortion, but to try and put an end to it. And it's to prevent the management companies from being able to divert the funds. But many of them now try to call a late fee that they were never entitled to. I mean, their contract with the HOA.
Yeah.
You see, you got these two, the management company contracts with the HOA, and the board doesn't know, you know, they're being advised by the professionals, right? Board doesn't even necessarily know what it's signing off on, and they're being advised by the attorney, who's also getting a share of what the a piece of that collection cost action that the management company's trying to. I'm not saying they get the management companies necessarily, but if the board signs off on this document, the attorney's also a beneficiary of the priority of payment scam. But they'll claim an entitlement to X dollars a month whenever the homeowner's in arrear. In arrears. It's like, wait a minute, why is the management company getting paid?
Yeah.
Isn't that a perverse incentive? I mean, you're supposed to be
collecting.
Why are you getting rewarded? And what have you done? I mean, this is just, it's rent seeking, and there's no merit to it. And so, you know, one of our points is this HOA in particular didn't authorize late fees. You had two choices, and they're not doing either one of those choices. They're trying to collect late fees, which they, in order to collect them, they're calling them collection costs, cost of collection. Well, this isn't a cost of collection. This is a cost of not collecting. And it's not even a cost because the HOA didn't pay it, and the management company didn't earn it. So, you know, that's one of the things that we're looking at. But they're trying to foreclose, and of course, the HOA attorney and the management company are members of the same trade group.
Of course.
And when you look at what they, I think I sent you a copy of this a ways back, Shu, but when you look at the discovery questions, it's all about entitlement to attorney's fees and these junk trash fees for the management company. It's not about paying the HOA. And in fact, my client has paid the HOA. This lawsuit is really for the benefit of the HOA management company and the HOA attorney. And, you know, we hope to make that real clear to the jury.
Isn't that always the case, Bill?
I think it is.
That's always the case.
I think it is. And I think probably, in my experience, to spend 99% of the time, you're going to find the players are always members of the same trade group. Always.
You know, I'm sitting here listening to you talk, and you talk about the HOA, and I'm thinking, we're so used to saying that. But that replaces, I mean, we're looking at involuntary membership corporation. So that's an AMC, an IMC, right?
Yeah.
It's not an HOA.
Right.
Unless you call it a homeowner's, but we don't like the word owners because that's not our home. Now, we've got to come up with something else. I was thinking a homeowner's corporation that becomes a HOC.
Right, or they call them a property owner's association. What I've been doing to abbreviate is call it HOA Corp. Because, you know, people are so used to using the word homeowner. I laughed when someone was complaining about, well, it's a homeowner's association, the homeowner should control it. Like, it's no better when the developer's in control than when the homeowner's in control. Not because they're always opposing, you know, it's certainly no better for the person who's always the target. It just doesn't matter. There shouldn't be either one of them in control of the types of things that they're trying to exert control over. And, I'm working with another subdivision that's down in the San Antonio area, and these poor people have when they bought, it was represented to them, there was a pool. In fact, I witnessed a very large sign on the side of the freeway that was advertising a pool.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. And myself and along with another attorney who does a lot of mass tort cases. And, you know, this whole subdivision, these people are buying these things. Well, the developer's claiming, well, we didn't tell anybody that. The builder's claiming, well, the developer told us, you know, so they're all trying to disclaim liability. Meanwhile, the developer who does control the HOA has been charging them, when they first bought, I think it was a little over $400 a year, maybe it's over $200 a year, but it quickly jumped within 2 years, this is since 2008, to $900 a year in assessments. There's no amenities to speak of. There's no pool. There's no clubhouse. There is a gate. But these people have no control over their own fate. They don't control the HOA. And all I've seen primarily is the developer has done things like enter into agreements with neighboring little local governments about responsibility for different things. Okay, and then he turns around, controls both the HOA and the developer. I say he, I'm just using that generically. These are really its because they're corporate entities or LLCs or limited partnerships. But then turns around and conveys what is nothing more than a liability, a maintenance liability, to the HOA, and then the same people that are employed by the developer, who are also board members of the HOA, then state that, yes, we accept responsibility for this thing. And guess what? The only people with the burden of paying anything to the HOA, they have to pay assignments, are the homeowners who own lots, not the developer. So all they're doing is saddling the homeowners in this with ongoing liabilities, like drainage ditches, medians, basins, things of this nature. Rainwater collection basin, not rainwater, stormwater. And all these other little local governments are just, we're not responsible for that. We're not responsible for that. And
yeah.
So the developer said, sure, I'll take care of it, and then immediately foist it off on the homeowners, whose homes now become security for payment for maintaining that, which is just crazy.
It's, you know, Bill, you sent me a lawsuit, and one of the quotes in there was, one of the greatest threats to liberty is the accumulation of excessive power in a single branch of the government. But that same thing could be said for what's going on in IMCs, involuntary membership corporations. Because all of the power seems to be in a trade organization.
Yes.
And we're seeing what that does, right?
It's pretty bad for the people that live there. And, you know, 2 years ago, I was censored on a public forum. The public forum started censoring my post because, you know, it was okay to talk positively about HOAs because that wasn't offensive. But if you said anything negative, my goodness, that you're disrupting the online social community, which is complete hogwash. So it's okay to have one viewpoint But they would censor, and by the way, you would also get censored if you mentioned the censoring, because you weren't supposed. So you know, nobody knew that the negative things were being removed, and actually they went so far as to put out a special notice. This is a pretty big public forum, that they were not going to allow any discussions of HOAs in Central Texas. And you know, at that time, what I didn't know, you know, I was like, what's provoking this all of a sudden? Well, at that time, it's when. You know, our friend and associate decided to try and threaten me with a bogus defamation suit, and had tried to find out, you know, who had posted those things. And the bottom line, of course, he didn't win any of that. That was all an attempt to intimidate. He tried to extend his normal intimidation practices that goes on in these subdivisions into real life that occurs outside the subdivisions. It didn't work. But what I see now is. This same public forum that 2 years ago, actually now it's 3 years ago, where, you know, saying that anything negative about an HOA wasn't permitted and it was going to be removed, now, 3 years later, you routinely see people asking, this whole forum is about people moving, relocating, and things like that to a new area. So they ask questions. So needless to say, it's heavily moderated by realtors, and people that have a vested interest in selling homes or in being, you know, getting a piece of the transaction. They don't care. They're looking for the next greater fool to buy these places. But what's amazing to me is the transition with just within 3 years from they didn't allow anything negative about HOAs. Even I don't want an HOA property. That was
negative.
That could provoke a negative discussion. You know, so that was the conduct on this forum. But you had to realize who moderates the forum. Now, you find plenty of, does anyone know whether there's a non-HOA home? Do you know if there are any non-HOA homes in this price range in this area? Can someone please point me to a non-HOA home? And I'm frankly kind of proud that, you know, even a site that was so dedicated to realtors before has recognized that you can't keep up this myth, this fog. You can't, you know, people who, there's plenty of people who are affected now, who know, and if you want to be able to sell property, you better not keep counting on HOA property, because people don't want it. There's lots of people that don't want it. And the bad behavior that this industry's engaged in, you know, it isn't just affecting unknown homeowners here and there. There are now judges, jury members, legislators.
Yeah.
It's happened to them or a family member.
Yeah, and you think they'd be smart enough to leave them. Well, Bill, we're out of time.
Okay.
We're out of time. Thank you so much. And so we'll be putting some of this new terminology up so everyone can read it.
Don't let them control the terminology.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.